"Are you the spy?" asked Father Hoyt. "The ouster spy?" The consul rubbed his cheeks and said nothing. He looked tired, spent.
"Yeah,"
said Martin Silenus.
"C.O. Gladstone warned me when I was chosen for the pilgrimage. She said that there was a spy."
"She told all of us,"
snapped Braun Lamia. She stared at the consul. Her gaze seemed sad.
"Our friend is a spy, but not merely an ouster spy."
The baby had awakened. Weintraub lifted her to calm her crying.
"He is what they call in the thrillers a double agent, a triple agent in this case, an agent to infinite regression, in truth, an agent of retribution."
The consul looked at the old scholar.
"He's still a spy," said Silenus. "Spies are executed, aren't they?"
Colonel Cassad had the death wand in his hand. It was not aimed in anyone's direction.
"Are you in touch with your ship?"
"Yes."
"How?"
"Through Ceres comlog. It was modified."
Cassad nodded slightly.
"And you've been in touch with the ousters via the ship's fatline transmitter?"
"Yes."
"Making reports on the pilgrimage as they expected?"
"Yes."
"Have they replied?"
"No."
"How can we believe him? He's a fucking spy!"
"Shut up,"
Colonel Cassad said flatly, finally. His gaze never left the consul.
"Did you attack Hetnestein?"
"No. But when the Yggdrasil burned, I knew that something was wrong."
"What do you mean?"
The consul cleared his throat.
"I've spent time with Templar voices of the tree. Their connection to their tree ships is almost telepathic. Mastine's reaction was far too subdued. Either he wasn't what he said he was, or he had known that the ship was to be destroyed and had severed contact with it. When I was on guard duty, I went below to confront him. He was gone. The cabin was as we found it, except for the fact that the Mobius box was in a neutral state. The Urg could have escaped. I secured it and went above."
"You did not harm Hetmestine?"
Cassad asked again.
"No."
"I repeat, why the fuck should we believe you?"
The poet was drinking scotch from the last bottle he had brought along. The consul looked at the bottle as he answered.
"You have no reason to believe me. It doesn't matter."
Colonel Cassad's long fingers idly tapped the dull casing of the death wand.
"What will you do with your fatline comlink now?"
The consul took a tired breath.
"Report when the time tombs open, if I'm still alive then."
Braun Lamia pointed at the antique comlog.
"We could destroy it."
The consul shrugged.
"It could be of use. We can eavesdrop on military and civilian transmissions made in the clear. If we have to, we can call the consul's ship."
"No!"
cried the consul. It was the first time he had shown emotion in many minutes.
"We can't turn back now."
"I believe we have no intention of turning back,"
said Colonel Cassad. He looked around at pale faces. No one spoke for a moment.
"There is a decision we have to make,"
said Saul Weintraub. He rocked his infant and nodded in the direction of the consul. Martin Silenus had been resting his forehead on the mouth of the empty bottle of scotch. He looked up.
"The penalty for treason is death."
He giggled.
"We're all going to die within a few hours anyway. Why not make our last act an execution?"
Father Hoyt grimaced as a spasm of pain gripped him. He touched his cracked lips with a trembling finger. "We're not a court."
"Yes,"
said Colonel Cassad.
"We are."
The consul drew up his legs, rested his forearms on his knees, and laced his fingers.
"Decide, then."
There was no emotion in his voice. Braun Lamia had brought out her father's automatic pistol. Now she set it on the floor near where she sat. Her eyes darted from the consul to Kassad.
We're talking treason here? Treason toward what? None of us, except maybe the colonel there, is exactly a leading citizen. We've all been kicked around by forces beyond our control.
Saul Weintraub spoke directly to the consul.
What you have ignored, my friend, is that if Mayna Gladstone and elements of the Corps chose you for the ouster contact, they knew very well what you would do. Perhaps they could not have guessed that the ousters had the means by which to open the tombs, although with the AIs of the Corps, one can never know. But they certainly knew that you would turn on both societies, both camps, which have injured your family. It is all part of some bizarre plan. You were no more an instrument of your own will than was...
He held the baby up.
This child.
The consul looked confused. He started to speak, shook his head instead.
That may be correct, said Colonel Fedmon Kassad. But however they may try to use all of us as pawns, we must attempt to choose our own actions.
He glanced up at the wall where pulses of light from the distant space battle painted the plaster blood red.
Because of this war, thousands will die, perhaps millions. If the ousters or the Shrike gain access to the Web's Farcaster system, billions of lives on hundreds of worlds are at risk.
The consul watched as Kassad raised the death wand.
This would be faster for all of us. The Shrike knows no mercy.
No one spoke. The consul seemed to be staring at something at a great distance. Kassad pressed on the safety and set the wand back in his belt.
We've come this far. We will go the rest of the way together.
Braun Lamia put away her father's pistol, rose, crossed the small space, knelt next to the consul, and put her arms around him. Startled, the consul raised one arm. Light danced on the wall behind them. A moment later, Saul Weintraub came close and hugged them both with one arm around their shoulders. The baby wriggled in pleasure at the sudden warmth of bodies. The consul smelled the talc and newborn scent of her.
I was wrong. I will make a request of the Shrike. I will ask for her.
He gently touched Rachel's head, where the small skull curved into neck. Martin Silenus made a noise which began as a laugh and died as a sob.
Our last requests. Does the Muse grant requests? I have no request. I want only for the poem to be finished.
Father Hoyt turned toward the poet. Is it so important?
Oh, yes, 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 yes,
gasped Silenus. He dropped the empty scotch bottle, reached into his bag, and lifted out a handful of flimsies, holding them high as if offering them to the group.
Do you want to read it? Do you want me to read it to you? It's flowing again. Read the old parts. Read the cantos I wrote 3 centuries ago and never published. It's all here. We're all here. My name. Yours. This trip. Don't you see? I'm not creating a poem. I'm creating the future.
He let the flimsies fall, raised the empty bottle, frowned, and held it like a chalice.
I'm creating the future,
he repeated without looking up.
But it's the past, which must be changed. One instant. One decision.
Martin Silenus raised his face. His eyes were red.
This thing that is going to kill us tomorrow. My Muse, our maker, our unmaker. It's traveled back through time. Well, let it. This time. Let it take me and leave Billy alone. Let it take me and let the poem end there, unfinished for all time.
He raised the bottle higher, closed his eyes, and threw it against the far wall. Glass shards reflected orange light from the silent explosions. Colonel Kassad stepped closer and laid long fingers on the poet's shoulder. for a few seconds. The room seemed warmed by the mere fact of human contact. Father Lennar Hoyt stepped away from the wall where he had been leaning, raised his right hand with thumb and little finger touching, three fingers raised, the gesture somehow including himself as well as those before him, and said softly,
"Ego te absolvo."
Wind scraped at the outer walls and whistled around the gargoyles and balconies. Light from a battle 100 million kilometers away painted the group in blood hues. Colonel Cassad walked to the doorway. The group moved apart.
"Let's try to get some sleep."